This is episode number 7 of Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, mobile development, and more. This show is hosted by Marco Arment. He is the creator of Tumblr and Instapaper, and I'm Dan Benjamin. Today's episode is sponsored by Zendesk, a leading provider of web-based help desk software that's reinventing how companies engage with their customers. Serving more than 5,000 businesses like Groupon, MSNBC, Twitter, and more, Zendesk products are easy to customize, integrate, and use so companies can quickly start offering better customer support. Use coupon code 5x5 to get 25% off your first 2 months at Zendesk.com and by Shopify.com, the internet's most elegant, customizable, and affordable hosted e-commerce platform. Take advantage of Shopify's thriving theme and application community to add beauty and depth to your site. You can customize your storefront using your own HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And for a limited time, Shopify customers who listen to this show can get their first 3 months free by using coupon code 5x5 at Shopify.com. Thanks to MailChimp.com for sponsoring the bandwidth for all of this stuff that we do here. And Marco, the App Store, the Mac App Store opened up this morning at like 9 a.m.
Yeah, this is fantastic. I have a feeling we're going to have our entire episode worth of content with just this.
Yes, forget your list. So much for your list.
Well, I made a separate list item for this.
But, of course,
it's going to be good.
Well, yeah, so, we thought it was coming out at like noon. That's what the rumors were saying. So we were talking about, oh man, maybe we should do the show at a different time. We can push it back so we can talk about it. And right after that, it the doors opened on the thing. So
well, it was noon somewhere. Although I think somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean.
Right. Yeah, it was noon somewhere. But I'm actually pretty impressed with it, but I have a lot of little complaints already. What about you? What's your take on it?
I mean, one of the first impressions you get is that there's really not much here so far. It's very few apps, and that's not that big of a surprise. But it's fewer than I thought there would be, actually.
Yeah, I was almost expecting it to be overwhelming. But it's not. And maybe that's a good thing. I mean, maybe that's intentional. You know, maybe they did that so that people wouldn't be overwhelmed by the number of apps. They'd be able to say, oh, these are the good ones. These are only the good ones. That's all we need to think about.
Right. And there's actually, I found a few apps that seem to be brand new to the App Store and to the Mac combined.
Well, like Angry Birds.
Well, and even apps that aren't games. I mean, so games are a different thing. Games are very easy to port for the most part from iPhone to Mac unless you have control issues because it's just OpenGL in both places. But you can't really port an app directly from the iPhone to the Mac because the entire interface library is different and every convention is different. And it's like if you have a lot of UIKit usage, you pretty much have to start from scratch.
Interesting. See, I didn't realize that detail. So that explains why some of these games are showing up there.
Exactly. I mean, they definitely did have to go through a lot of work to port the control schemes over, but it's nothing like porting an entire application that has a bunch of UIKit interfaces.
Right.
Which you have to, not only do you have to restart all of your interface code, but you have to really consider the design of the app because the conventions of the way non-game apps work on Mac OS versus on iOS are very, very different.
So I was thinking about how could we approach this? Do we start with the things we like or the things we hate or the things that, so I just thought.
I have a list.
Well, if you've got a list, let's do it.
All right. So one of the first things I noticed, other people were reporting this as well, is that it will detect a lot of applications that you already have installed, but it will say where normally the price would show up, and it says buy. It'll say installed,
right?
And it detects that whether you purchased it through the App Store or not, which is great. That way, you don't have to worry about accidentally purchasing something you already got, and the App Store clearly recognizes what you already have.
Yeah, perfect example for me. I saw Transmit, which is a licensed app that I have already in my applications folder. And it saw that. But before we go too far in that direction, there was something that John Gruber and I talked about yesterday on the talk show. And John says that he keeps all of the apps that he installs himself in an applications folder in his home folder. In other words, he doesn't put them into slash applications at the root. He puts them into, you know, users John applications, which is a fully supported thing in Mac OS X and has been for a very long time. And it's what Mac OS X considers to be a magic folder, so that if you right now, if you don't have one already, and you go and make a folder called applications in your home directory, it understands what that is, and it will actually change the icon of that to match the applications folder icon and everything. It supports it, and it knows to look there for applications, and LaunchBar and other utilities will also look there usually automatically. This is a supported thing.
Doesn't it also combine so that if you click the applications item in the Finder default window layout, doesn't it also show results from both your folder and the system one?
Oh, now that's interesting. I didn't think it did, but that would be interesting if it did.
I think it might.
I'll try it while you talk.
Okay. One weird thing about this setup, about it detecting your apps, is that in the purchases section of the store app, it will list only what you bought from the store app. So it recognizes all the apps you have that it knows about, but it doesn't list them anywhere. So there's no way to say list all the apps I have installed that are App Store compatible or that have entries in the App Store. And I'm wondering how that's going to work with updates. I'm guessing the update system in the App Store app is just going to ignore all these other apps that it recognizes but that it doesn't have control over.
Right. It would have to. And that's fascinating. One of the things that I was wondering about when we saw that this was coming out, I thought, man, I wonder if it's going to put them somewhere else. And that a lot of people were speculating about that. Where is it going to throw these apps? You know, is it going to put them right into applications, and how would it know? What if you delete one? And people were quick to point out, well, if you delete one, you can always just re-download it, and it knows. So this is another question. How does it know?
Right. And that's great.
How does it know, though? So let's say I go and I downloaded Transmit, and for you know, my kid goes and bangs on the keyboard and manages to delete Transmit from the applications folder and empty the hard drive. What happens to me? How do I get that back?
Well, as far as I know, there's some kind of receipt system. I haven't looked into it yet because I'm not currently developing a Mac app, but. There's some kind of system where developers can check for receipts of what was bought and I think it's meant for some kind of rudimentary copy protection, but I don't really know the details of that. But I imagine it's similar to the App Store on iOS, which is that Apple knows what apps you've ever purchased, and if you ever try to repurchase the same app that you've already bought in the past, it'll just say, okay, this is free because you bought it in the past.
Right. Well, here's what I did as a test. I put since we're talking about it, I put Transmit into the applications folder in my home directory, in my home folder, and quit the App Store and relaunched it. And in doing so, it still shows that Transmit, it still sees it as being installed, even though it's in that different location. But it doesn't. It only shows up in that folder. It doesn't show up anywhere else. It doesn't show up in my. You know, that's the only place that Transmit appears right now.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was wrong. Oh, well.
But the App Store still sees it. The App Store still knows it's there, even though it's in a different location.
Oh, also, one thing related to this, there's no automatic or easy uninstall method for apps.
Right.
And that's a pretty big omission. And I think part of that is that the interface for launching apps, at least based on that keynote a while ago, seems like it's going to change a lot in the next OS X Lion.
Right.
So I think maybe that'll be easier, where you know you do the click and hold and hit the wiggling X thing. Maybe something like that. Or I think this is kind of like copy and paste on the iPhone, which is that Apple hasn't yet had time to whip up a good solution. And so when Apple doesn't have a good solution to something, they generally opt to have no solution for it,
right?
Until they can have a good one. And so I think in this case, uninstalling apps is like that, where they haven't quite figured out how they want to do it yet, or they just haven't gotten to it yet. And as a result, it's just going to be unaddressed until they figure out something good.
Right. Very typical of Apple to do that, to say, we know that we need to do this somehow, not sure how, so we'll just sort of look in the other direction.
Exactly. I've also noticed, so this is I suspect we're going to have a lot to talk about regarding pricing.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing I've noticed immediately is that Apple's software has undergone a price cut.
A big time price
cut. Which is great. So even like a Aperture is on here.
Yeah.
And it's for $80. And normally it's on Amazon, it's $160 right now. I just checked. I don't know what the official retail price is. It might be $200, but it's on Amazon, it's $160 for the DVD, and you can buy it on the App Store for half that, for $80. And I think that's great. And also there's the remote desktop client. I don't know how much, or the remote desktop server, I think, whatever that is. I don't know how much it normally retails for, but it's also $80. And what's really nice, what I like a lot, the only app I've bought so far has been iMovie, because I have a Mac that came with a prior version of iLife, and I usually update iWork, but I don't usually update iLife, you know, when new versions come out, because it's just,
right.
Usually I just don't care that much, and because I don't, I think the best iLife app is iPhoto, but I don't use it. I use Lightroom instead, so I don't really need to update those things. But I do occasionally have a need for iMovie, and iMovie, since it's, was it 2007, the big reset where they kind of started from scratch, or 08, one of those.
Right, where they sort of then, sort of made that, the created a larger chasm between Final Cut Pro and iMovie, yeah.
Well, since then, iMovie has undergone massive improvements in each version. So it actually is worth updating for that if you use it. And what they've done now is they've split the iLife apps up. They haven't addressed iDVD or the web page creating one yet, but you can now buy iMovie, GarageBand, and iPhoto separately on the App Store for $15 each. And that's pretty cool. So I bought iMovie for $15, and that way I don't have to spend $40 or $50 for the full upgrade just to get right. that one edition. And then also Keynote, Numbers, and Pages, formerly iWork, now you can buy those separately for $15 as well each. And that's great also, because I don't really use Keynote and Pages enough to update them, but I use Numbers all the time. And so I think that's something where, again, it isn't worth it for me to pay $50 to $70 each time they come out with a new version to get the newest one. But if it's going to be 15 for just Numbers, and you know, then that's the one that I really need the update for. That's great,
right?
So I love being able to buy them individually.
Yeah, I mean that to me that is got to be one of the biggest, I think, improvements right there in the fact that this store is around. It just means you can now buy things that were being sold as a bundle. Mm-hmm. You can buy them individually, independently. And that's there's a lot of people out there who have no interest in using Numbers, and maybe they don't even want to use Keynote. They just want Pages. Or, you know, now it's $19.
15, I think.
15. Even better. So, you know, I mean, why not? I think it's a great... It's interesting to me, of course, to see this happening more with the Apple apps, of course, because Apple doesn't have to give 30% of its money to anybody else. It can keep that. So it almost seems like they gave themselves the discount and sort of passed it on to us by saying, look, we're going to discount things to get you to more interested in them, to get you to buy them. In other words, if you wanted to sell your app, you'd have to give Apple a cut. Well, Apple's sort of taking that cut and almost giving it back to us as a discount. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, previously they were giving that cut to retailers,
right.
To Amazon, to, you know, to box stores. And that's another thing, too. You don't have to order a box and wait for it to arrive. You know, previously the cheapest and one of the only ways to get, say, iWork was you could download the trials from Apple. So then that was easy. They would last a month. But if you wanted to get a serial number to register them, or if you accidentally hit that, you know, that 30th day and all of a sudden it stops working and you really need it. The only thing you could do, I don't know if you could ever buy one online from Apple, but they were much cheaper if you got them from Amazon. But you'd have to purchase the boxed copy from Amazon, right. Have them ship it to you. In my case, have a courier lose it for a week. Amazon Prime couriers are a nightmare. A1 courier service. The only way to get these things was basically the box software route. And now you can just go to the App Store and click and download, and there's no payment entering. There's no box. There's no shipping. There's no cardboard to throw away and feel guilty about. You literally just go online, buy it, and it downloads, and you have it, you know, a few minutes later. That's fantastic. I love that. And Aperture was always the same way too. You know, you could get a trial and then you could buy it, but that was it. I would love if all my apps came this way. I suspect Adobe probably will never ship Photoshop this way, so that'll probably be the one holdout where I'm going to have a closet full of Photoshop boxes of over the years.
But, right.
Otherwise, this is fantastic. One thing, though, what I've noticed is I'm not trying any of these apps, and this is a really big deal. So I'm seeing a bunch of apps that look great, and, oh, wow, I could possibly use those. I'd love to try it out, but it's $20, $30, $50.
Right.
And I think this, you know, the App Store system in iOS has never allowed for any kind of trials. You had to just create a separate free edition or make the basic app free and then unlock all the features with an in-app purchase, something like that, as we talked about before. I think this really, really underscores the need for a trial system. That really hurts here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. There's so many of these apps that, you know, if you consider the thinking in the past was, okay, you can download the light version and you can use that, or you can download a trial version and it'll expire after a certain amount of time. And those things are missing right now.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sure that people will have a free version or a light version, but in many, it's not necessarily tied together. It's not necessarily obvious. You know, like some of the apps are giving introductory prices 50% off for a limited time, that kind of thing. But
I mean, I saw that too, but the problem is 50% off of an $80 app is $40.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's still $40. That's still a price that I'm not going to spend for something I've never tried.
Right. That's a great point.
It works on iOS because usually the most you'll pay for an app with no free version is usually about $5. And that's very unusual. Usually there's either a free version or the app with no free version will be like $1 to $3, say. And that's a very small risk. You know, that's the sales tax on these other apps, you know. So that's right. That's a very small risk. So most people are willing to take that risk. But when your entry price is a minimum of $10 and going up to like $50 or $60, I don't see anybody going to the store and dropping $60 on an app they haven't tried yet. I really think that. And so what I've tried to do with some of these, they'll look great, and so I'll go look on their websites to see if they have a trial version there.
Hmm.
And some of them don't. So I don't really know what to do about that. And they don't have a free version here, but I'm thinking. So one thing that I saw that iSale did, it's an eBay listing app, been around forever. They have the full version is $25, and they have an express edition that's $10. And I haven't looked that much into it, but I think it's just, you know, fewer features, maybe some limits here and there. So it's not a free version. And as far as I can tell, they don't have a free version. But it's just a lower priced version that has fewer features where they can still make some money on it, but it'll attract users who don't want to pay the full price without ever having used this app.
Right.
And this, I suspect this is actually going to be a common pattern, which is going to raise some interesting questions. So one of the big ones is if you do this, if you have, say, like a light or express version at a low price, and then you have your regular app at a higher price, do you also have a free version?
Hmm.
That's a big question, right? So how do you address that concern? And then how cheap is the express version? You know, in this case, it's $10. I think that's still too high. I think if you're going to do this where you have kind of a paid trial version or a paid light version, it has to be impulse buy territory. I'm thinking $2 to $5.
Yeah.
Or you just have a free version and you don't even have this express version. Because it's weird if you have three different editions of the app. That's and you know, one's free, one's a few bucks, and one's a lot. I think the one that's a few bucks, why would you use that one? Or alternately, if it's so good that people would pay for it above the free version, why would they ever buy the big one? You know, so this is going to be problematic. And of course, if trials are introduced, that removes the need for the free editions of anything. And I would love to see that happen. If trials are out, you eliminate the free versions of all these Mac apps that have free and paid, or at least many of them. And then you legitimately can have the kind of light express version for a low price,
yeah,
and then the full version for a high price. But then one of the big problems, if you do that, if you have the express and full, is that in the current App Store setup, if those are two different apps, you can never get a discounted upgrade from the express,
mm-hmm,
to the full.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing is really going to stress the limits of the App Store. And I suspect and I hope that this will finally motivate Apple to change these things.
Well, you know, I think it's really a big question mark in my mind as to how Apple will make these changes and to how quickly Apple will address some of these issues, how quickly they'll actually become problems. You know, we saw a lot of problems, and we've talked about this a number of times, you and I, with, you know, the application approval process and how Apple has actually responded to that. What do you think their take is going to be on this? Because, you know, I guess there's a fair question is how many more Mac users are there than iPhone plus iPad owners or vice versa?
I think the iOS market is larger than the Mac,
yeah,
market. I forget what people have said. I think they said the Mac market is somewhere around 25 to 35 million, something in that range, whereas the iOS market is above 100 million. So it's, I think. So the iOS market is bigger, and it's probably going to stay bigger for quite some time.
Yeah.
If not forever. So it does make, you know, you are going to have to charge higher prices, I think, for Mac apps, and that's fine. And they're also a lot more work for most cases. You know, a full-featured Mac, you know, desktop class application is going to be a lot more code, a lot more features, a lot more testing than most apps for iOS platforms. So it does make sense they're going to have to charge higher prices. But then, and that's why I think trials are the way to go here. But you can't do them yet. And, you know, in-app purchase solves some of this. Like you could have the free app with in-app purchase to unlock things. And that actually might be the answer to the whole express versus full edition versus free. So maybe you have a free app that has a bunch of limits, and then you can buy either the express, like in-app purchase,
right,
for a low price to unlock some features, or you could buy the full one to unlock all features. And if you have the Express, maybe then it offers you a discounted upgrade to the full version. So those are three different in-app purchases to kind of solve this problem. So that's possible. Although to manage that, you have to have a bunch of overhead and a server and everything else. So it's a little, it's not the best solution. A well-supported trial system. And also, that solution wouldn't solve the issue of what do you do if the best kind of limit for your app is a time limit, or some other kind of trial limit.
Right.
You know, if you do the in-app purchase route and you have free version with some features, et cetera, then you have to make sure that those features of the free version aren't going to be enough for the majority of people, because then they'll just stick with the free version and you'll never recoup your costs. And some apps and games are easier limited than others, as we've talked about before. So you can more easily say with a game, only play the first level or something like that. Or with some apps, you can say, oh, okay, well, you can run this very small feature set, but you can't print or you can't save or something like that. And that'll give you a taste of the app.
Yeah.
But I think neither of those are going to have as good a conversion rates and sales rates as a proper trial system where you can say this app is fully functional for 30 days, 14 days, whatever the case may be, and then you got to pay if you want to keep using it. And I think the shareware / software market has already discovered that over the last few decades. They've already figured that that's really the best way to do it, and that's why that's the way most of them are done. That's how Apple does it,
yeah, know,
with their own apps.
That's what I was going to say. That's Apple's way.
So I don't know. I think at some point they are going to have to address the trials, but it also seems like recently Apple's been kind of strained in their software development resources. And I don't really know when I would expect this to be implemented. They might just try to go as long as possible without doing it. And with iOS, everyone keeps predicting on iOS that they're going to add trials, and they never have. And it doesn't look like they're going to change that anytime soon there. So I wouldn't necessarily expect that to change very much on the Mac App Store either. But boy, is it necessary.
Yeah.
Now, there's another possibility, which is what if so on iOS, it's less necessary because almost every paid app has a free edition if it's reasonable, if the paid app is of noticeable price. And most prices are so low that people are willing to take those risks. What if the Mac App Store actually does do what a lot of developers fear and dramatically lower average sale prices of Mac apps?
But at the same time, wouldn't they be increasing the number of sales? In theory?
I think almost definitely.
So it doesn't balance?
It could. In many cases, it will. It depends on where that curve is. The market really isn't as big as the iOS market.
Yeah.
I think people need less software on desktops than on mobile platforms for lots of reasons. That's a whole other topic right there.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you there.
Now, that's interesting. See, I think what the average person does on a computer can be solved by a couple of productivity apps, like, you know, a word processor, a spreadsheet, and a web browser. And that's about it. Most home users use webmail. They don't even use mail, like the mail client. They use webmail. They use maybe an IM app, but even IM is kind of going out of fashion and trending more towards Facebook and email and Twitter. And most people use websites for all those things. They don't use apps. Whereas I think in a mobile context, a lot of the apps are doing things because doing similar things on their websites would take too long or be too clunky or aren't optimized for the screen size or can't have certain hardware access that's very useful. I also think gaming is much more prevalent on mobile platforms than on desktops.
That's very true. Well, so,
what would you argue about people needing more or a similar level of software on a desktop?
Well, I can maybe I'm basing this on my own experience and experience of some people that I know, and maybe we're atypical, but on my mobile devices, I have, you know, maybe two or three apps total that I use. And on all of my Macs, even the ones that are the most pared down, I certainly have more applications that I rely on or that I enjoy using or use daily than that. Even the basic ones, I mean, let's just, you know, I'm not even talking about the Macs that I use to produce these shows or to do editing with. But if you, you know, I mean, I'm not going to bore people by telling them what I use, but everything from Mail to Skype to Safari to iTunes to, you know, Jimbo, TextMate, Instapaper, Transmit. I mean, you know, I could read this list, Twitter clients. There's a handful of games and other utilities and things that I use. That's not even mentioning Pages and iPhoto or Aperture or Lightroom in my case, you know, and on my phone, I've got Mail, the Twitter client, and like the NFL app, you know, and I rarely browse on a mobile platform, even when I wasn't stuck with Android, because I need to be on Verizon here. Even when I was on an iPhone, you know, I use the camera app. There's a handful of apps, but I'm not, and I think I'm just atypical though. But I know a lot of people who do not fall into the geek category like us, who are, you know, they're content to have just those few apps. They use their iPads, you know, they've got the Kindle app on it, and they've got their browser, and they've got their email, and like, maybe if they have kids, they have games and stuff for their kids, but I don't know. You know, I mean, again, maybe I'm atypical here, and I acknowledge that possibility as a strong one, but I don't know. I mean, I think people are especially now, if you step out of the Mac community especially, and you go into the PC world, oh, people are loaded up with tons and tons and tons and tons of crappy apps.
Well, willingly?
Some, probably not, but they don't know what to do. You know, they don't know what they're doing over there with the PCs. But you know, see, you know, I don't know.
Maybe it's just because I'm a developer, but I really dislike software in general. I have like a natural aversion to using more software than I really need for anything, because I know that every app I install is a potential headache. You know, it's going to need updates. It might install something stupid behind the scenes that I don't want it to install. Everyone loves growl notifications. That's awesome, but I don't really want growl notifications. Right. I don't use growl.
Right.
So many apps come with it and install it transparently without telling you, that I have to uninstall growl from my system about twice a year. And I don't even know where it comes from. Like, it's other apps that I just don't really
right.
pay attention
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I really don't. And it pops up saying, there's an update to growl available. Click here. And it gives me a notification.
Yeah.
When did I even install that? So I'm looking through the App Store. A lot of these apps do something that's relatively simple. Like a lot of the low-priced ones, $5, $3. Like, oh, you can crop an image quickly, say. Well, that's great, except that I don't really want a whole other app to do that. Because first of all, I have to remember to use it. Second of all, I'm probably not going to remember, so it's going to sit around there forever, take up disk space, be indexed by Spotlight forever, and eventually I'll go through the app folder and delete it. And, you know, why did I do that? But then also, you know, what if I start loving this app? It's fantastic. I use it all the time. And then the developer abandons it. Yeah. And then I update to a new version of OS X, it stops working, and I have to find an alternative. Like, that sucks. I never want to go through that if I can help it. And every time your workflow becomes dependent on more software, the risk of that happening goes up. And the frequency that it will happen goes up. And that's annoying. Like, I recently switched from Quicksilver to LaunchBar.
Yeah, oh, good. Good for you.
And LaunchBar has so many good features. I love its clipboard history.
Yeah, I love LaunchBar.
I know there are other apps that do clipboard histories, but I love LaunchBar as the best. Just the mechanics of it, the interface, it's fantastic. Until it stops working after a while and I have to reboot, but that's a minor thing. It could be a system thing. But just switching from Quicksilver to LaunchBar, two apps that have a lot of feature overlap, and that, you know, LaunchBar really does replace Quicksilver. But just switching, there are so many little differences. Like what the escape key does, how backspace works in the QuickType bar. So many little tiny differences that drive me crazy because I'm not fully adjusted to them yet, because I use Quicksilver for 5 years. And just little things like that just drive me crazy. And now, you know, I wouldn't switch to something that does the same thing if I thought for a second that this company was going to go out of business next year, or was going to just, you know, or maybe their developer would stop, you know, would lose interest in the platform, or would be hired by Google and would want to go work for them instead. Any of those things, you know, anything that could happen. Same thing happens with websites, really. Like if you get attached to a web service and then some big company buys it, chances are it's not going to be there anymore.
Very true.
You know, and unless it's a really big web service that was bought for its own value and not just a talent acquisition.
Right. Well, so hold on. Let's take a big step back for a second, because I there's some things that I want to talk about at the App Store itself before we even keep going down this tangent, which is a good one. But I don't want to gloss over that there are a handful of interesting things that happen just in looking at and using the App Store app itself that I wanted to talk about. Unless this goes too far off your list.
No, this is good.
Okay. So the first thing is, and I had meant to do this, and actually I have another machine that I can do this on, but I'm curious to know if you did it. What happens if you go to if you go to the Apple menu and go to Mac OS X software on a Mac as of today, it still, at least in my case, it still took me to apple.com/downloads. And which is the site that we were told would potentially be going away. And that site in and of itself, that is redesigned. There's now under the download section, something big with a big new tag on it says introducing the Mac App Store. And beneath that, it has updates for iTunes and Safari. And beneath that, it has an iOS updates link, a place to go for dashboard widgets, Safari extensions, and some trial software from Apple. So that is what is currently the apple.com/downloads page. Of course, if you go on to a machine that has 10.6.6, the menu item that used to be called Mac OS X software now says App Store ... And when you select that menu item, the App Store itself launches. So this came bundled with 10.6.6. And there are some interesting things about the app itself, some of which we saw in the demo a while back. But one of them is it has for the stoplights, the little window control buttons in the upper left-hand corner of the chrome of the window, they are in a sort of different position, just like they've been playing around with iTunes. Mm-hmm. Apple has been playing around with where to put these. And now in the new App Store window, as opposed to being up at the top left edge of the chrome, they're sort of floating in the center parallel to the forward and back buttons, which when I saw it in the screenshot, I did not like that. I thought, oh man, that's screwy. But I really do like it now that I'm actually using it, and I think for some apps that might actually make sense. But what's interesting about it is, you know, the one thing that we've had as a convention, and we think a lot of the time that any application that seems to give us a portal to data, to other information that's similar to a browsing experience like the one we have in Safari, you know, especially when it feels so much like WebKit, like the App Store does, you almost think to yourself, I need a home button. And that occurred to me is like I was browsing around the App Store and I thought, oh, wait, how do I get back home? Like, where is that start screen, that start page? It wasn't there and there's no home button. Well, it turns out that featured is actually home. The featured button takes you to the home screen. There's top charts, categories, purchases, and updates. And they're in these sort of grayed out icons. When they're not selected, they're grayed out. This mimics in a lot of ways the interface that you see if you're using the iOS App Store on like an iPad, for example. They also look like maybe they're disabled, but of course there's no way to hide the text that's underneath those icons. There's no way to make the icons smaller. So it's sort of like this strange new fixed interface at the top. That's just something that I don't know how many other people besides like you and I would notice it or care about it. The other thing that's kind of neat is when you download an app, and John Syracuse was talking about this on Twitter today, when you download an app and it downloads, it flies out of the App Store into your dock. And now it's in your dock.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I use a side dock. I don't think it did that.
It did that. Because I use a side dock too.
Maybe I just didn't notice. Maybe I walked away.
Yeah, go download like one of the free apps, doesn't matter which one, and you'll see it flies right out of the App Store right into your dock. And it's
yep.
Did you see that? And it's now in your dock. And what John was Syracuse was writing, it was talking about on Twitter was, you know, this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but imagine what people's docs are quickly going to look like as you install these apps. I don't know that there's a better way to do it. Because it would really encumber the installation process. That this is great. I don't need to download a zip file and then uncompress it into a DMG and then mount the DMG and then drag the thing into applications and then stick it in my dock. But at the same time, I mean, your dock is going to get cluttered fast. But I don't know. Is that such a bad thing? So anyway, those are my sort of initial thoughts on using the app. What do you think?
Well, you're running into a big usability issue. So I downloaded this free app. And it went to my dock. So, and then I saw, okay, it kind of sucks. I want to get rid of it. I dragged it out of my dock. Of course, that just makes the icon poof away. And the app is still installed. But now I can't find it. Right. I mean, you know, I can find it, but an average user might not.
Exactly.
So I deleted the app, I think, even though I really didn't. So that's one problem. Then I go back to the App Store. What if I change my mind? I want to reinstall it again in the future. You go to it and it says installed, and you can't re-download it.
Right.
And you can't There's never any way for the interface to automatically put that back into the dock where it was before.
Right.
Unless you go and make your own icon or delete it from your applications folder, which no one's ever going to do. These are things that I expect will be addressed in 10.7, but you know we'll have to see.
Well, that's kind of what makes this whole decision, Apple's whole decision to release this well in advance of 10.7. It makes it interesting because there are probably, I don't know if I would go so far as to use the word problems, but there are issues that as you say may not even get addressed. They may even, Apple may have no plans to address them in 10.6. These may all be addressed elegantly in 10.7, but in a lot of ways, the App Store is borrowing technology from 10.7 for releasing it today.
Yeah, this is going to be really interesting to see how many of these problems just get ignored for how long. I mean, I think between now and 10.7, when is it supposed to come out? Next summer?
Yeah, I believe so.
Do we know?
Yeah.
Whenever that comes out, I'm guessing between now and then, nothing like this is going to be addressed.
Right.
And whenever we have a beta of 10.7 where developers can actually test it, I would imagine we'll have a lot more information then on how what's going on, although we probably won't be able to talk about it, but other people will. And then we could link to it.
So let me ask you this, Marco. What happens if right now, what happens if we delete an application, whether we've installed it from here or not? What if we just delete it? Does the App Store quickly recognize that and then prompt you with an opportunity to re-download it?
Let me try. I need a much louder keyboard so I can keep up with the talk show's expected noise levels.
Yeah, John's keyboard is quite...
Oh, this is interesting.
Sort of like a character of its own on the show.
It's installed with either as root or something. You have to type in your password to delete the app out of the applications folder.
So that's interesting, and that's something that I was going to bring up too, is that in many cases, installing an application manually, in other words, the process we already identified where you're dragging it over from a mounted DMG, in most cases doing that, it's installed with you as the owner. In other words, behind the scenes in the Unix file system management process that handles copying the file, it's there as you. It's Marco or Dan.
Right.
If you want to delete it, you just command delete when the file is selected or drag it into the trash and it's gone. If the app is installed as you. But if it's installed by something like an installer, or if it's a system app of some kind, you're frequently prompted to enter your username password. And you're saying that if you try to delete one that the App Store has installed, that's the same case.
Exactly. And to answer your earlier question, when you delete an application that you bought by deleting its actual file from the applications folder, I kept its page open mm-hmm. in the App Store, and that didn't refresh. That's basically a web page. It didn't automatically switch, but as soon as you reload that page, it switched back to the uninstalled state. So now it says, you know, free or 99¢.
Right. And
you
can, so I did.
So it does handle deletes well.
That's very impressive. I'm glad to see that. Looking here, doing the Unix ls-la command in terminal inside the applications folder, I can see that most, if not all, of the applications that I installed myself are owned by user Dan, which is my user, and group staff, which is the default group for all users on mm-hmm. Mac OS X, and the Apple installed folders and applications, for example, Photo Booth and Preview, are owned by user root and group wheel. So looking at one of the applications that I installed this morning, Text Wrangler, it's also owned by root and wheel. And if I wanted to delete that, as you say, I could do command delete while selecting it. And just like you said, it would have to prompt me. But that prompt, I believe, is something that's not new to 10.6.6.
It's sudo.
That's just sudo, right. And that's true if you use a text editor to edit a system file, it'll prompt you before it saves it. That's just something exactly. That's built in. But that's actually a really nice thing to see, because people You know, like you think you'd have to be crazy to just start deleting stuff out of your applications folder, but people do that kind of thing all the time.
Well, one of the big benefits of the way iOS manages applications is that it forces the user to stay away from the file system, and which is great for the user. It's always very obvious when you have an app installed and when you don't, and how you install it and how you delete it. With this, there on the Mac, it's always been a much more blurry line because you have the concept of icons in the dock and shortcuts and aliases. And so on the Mac, you can very easily do something that you don't intend, which is you can say delete the shortcut
right.
without deleting the app, or you can delete the app and still have a shortcut to it somewhere. It's strange the way that all works for most novice users. That's very weird to think about. And with the App Store, they haven't really addressed that. They did address one of the biggest problems, which is installation. They at least made that good.
Yeah.
Because the old way of doing it with, you know, the disk image and unzip a disk image and then drag this thing from its own window to another spot in its own window that was an alias to your applications folder and then eject and delete this disk image. I mean, that which is this virtual disk that people, I mean, think of all the things people have to understand to know what the heck that they're doing there.
Yeah.
It's amazing this ever became a standard. I've always hated it. I'm sure there's a good reason for it. Maybe keeping disk permissions in place or something, but why it couldn't just be a zip file of the application bundle is beyond me. But anyway, they addressed the installation part of that, which is great, but they didn't address deleting or managing or moving. So you still uninstalling, as I said, you know, you move the icon off the dock, say, but
right.
it's not deleted. And it's just, those issues are all still left to their old state. And so it's going to be nice from the perspective of it solved a lot of installation issues, which is probably going to dramatically cut down on support demands. And of course, it solved payment issues as well. So I've always heard from developers that payment processing, serial number issuing and recovering, and installation support were always the three biggest support needs. This has solved all three of those. That's awesome. But it there's still other places it can go, and it still needs to solve managing, deleting. The other question, and this is maybe another reason they didn't address this yet, is when you delete an app, do you delete its data? On iOS, it's very easy. The answer is yes. The whole system is architected so that everything is separate. On OS X, you can't really do that. There's a lot of weird side effects if you would delete someone's data. Like, let's say you have a word processing app. Do you delete all the documents they made with that app? That'd be terrible.
You would immediately say absolutely not. But if you have Pages app installed on your iPad and you delete it, what happens there?
Well, you don't. There's no saved documents as far as I know.
So they have that walled off in that way.
Exactly. And the whole system has been designed that way. On Mac OS X, they really can't do that. They haven't had the whole system designed that way. And there is legacy to consider here. So they really can't do that same thing. But even more basic things, where do you, like, do you delete the library application support folder for an app if you delete the app? Do you delete caches? Do you delete, like, all these other associated folders, where on a Mac, these folders are all over the place? You know, and I think that might be changing in 10.7. I hope it does.
Yeah.
But right now, I have the remnants of probably hundreds of apps that I've installed over the last 6 years. I keep carrying over the same user account with each new computer. And by the way, my migration assistant works great. But you know, I have all these fragments and weird little folders and preference files for all these apps that I don't use anymore. And I mean, yeah, there are some apps that will go through and try to clean it up for you, but I don't want another app. So maybe I should at least make an exception for that one. But for the most part, there's a lot of clutter. And especially with Apple moving more and more to SSDs in their computers, disk space matters.
Right.
And it didn't matter for a while. Now disk space is starting to matter a lot again. So keeping everything neat and tidy and clean and small is actually a pretty important thing for Apple to focus on. And so I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens in 10.7 with app management and installing, deleting, what becomes better and what becomes more automatic.
So one thing, while you were talking about that, I thought I would try an experiment. Again, I mentioned Transmit earlier. That was an app that I installed and bought well before the App Store was even an idea, right? So that's something that was already there that I paid for and bought. It showed as installed in the App Store. When I deleted that app, even though at first I moved it, and when I moved it into my home applications in my home folder, it continued to see it. But when I put it in the trash, it no longer said, re-download or anything. It said buy.
Right, because you didn't buy it.
Because I didn't buy it through then.
Right.
And people, I'm sure, are going to get confused thinking, well, I did have it. I don't know what happened to it. Why can't I just download it from here?
Oh, exactly. And that's another thing. I think for all the installation and payment support that Apple is saving developers with the App Store, the transition is probably going to be messy.
Yeah.
It's probably going to have a lot of problems like that. And I suspect at first this is going to be a big increase in support load for developers, but only temporarily, only for a few months or maybe at most a year, depending on people's demographics for their apps, during which people are transitioning from the old way of buying it to the new way of buying it. And I think one way to reduce that is if you transition to App Store only.
Right.
I noticed, I think, was it Pixelmator? Yeah, I think Pixelmator just did this. They announced this on their site. They also dropped their price. I think it used to be $80. On Amazon, they say it's $60 now. On the App Store, it's $29.
Right.
And they also say on their site, we're now App Store only. And here's how the transition is going to work.
Hmm.
And I think if you do that, you are going to dramatically increase your support and kind of pain in the butt needs right now, but that's going to then drop off later, where you take on a lot more trouble now, but then in a year from now you're probably done.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have your app sold through your site separately or through a box copy, if you continue to sell it in both channels, both the App Store and the separate retail/download channel, I think you're going to always have these support issues and always the crossover and the separate editions. Another weird thing, if you run a sale on the App Store, are you going to keep the same price on your website?
Yeah. And
there's so many issues.
It's interesting because when I click the purchases button, I'll call it a tab for lack of a better word, in the App Store, it shows me the purchases that I've made. Even of course, the free apps are called purchases. And it says installed next to it. Wouldn't it be great if Apple provided a way, and there would have to be really, really good security around this, because it would be too easy to hack if it wasn't. Of course, Apple would do that. But wouldn't it be great if there was a way for app manufacturers, for the software companies, to essentially send you a receipt, a purchase receipt of some kind, that would tell the App Store you have bought this, even though you didn't download it through the App Store, even though you already had it, tell the App Store that you did get this through us and allow you to show that as a purchase for re-download and update purposes.
Maybe there is no chance that will ever happen.
Yeah, and maybe something like that.
30%.
Okay, well, tell me why. But before you do, wouldn't that be able to be handled through the updates? Wouldn't you find then that? And again, we'll pick Transmit again. What if the panic guys release an update for Transmit? The App Store sees that I have it, allows me to update it, and from then on knows that I've purchased it.
That would be awesome, except that, for the same reason why Apple limits promo codes to 50 per version instead of just giving you unlimited promo codes.
Right.
If you had a way to register somebody as having purchased an app without actually having purchased it through Apple, it would enable you to evade the 30% commission and basically sell your app regularly using that mechanism on your own site. Keep the commission, get more details from people, et cetera, and then just send this message to Apple saying they bought it. And then you have all the luxuries of being in the App Store without giving Apple their cut.
Right.
So there's no chance that would ever happen, I don't think.
So overall, what's your take on this? Is this a big of a deal as they made it out to be? Is it a bigger deal?
I don't know exactly how, you know, what their level of hype was that they had promised us. I think it's a very big deal. It's very, very impressive. It has a lot of work to do, but it is version one, and it looks very similar to the iPad store, for, you know, the iPad app store. It's, you know, there's a few very small availability of apps, but what's there is some big names and everything. I expect it's going to get beefed out a lot over the next few months. And man, if they do trials, that's going to be so important. That's going to change everything. Right now, it's a great store to look around in, but I'm not making a lot of purchases because I'm not going to take $20 to $50 risks on apps that I'm not going to try first. So right now, I'm just kind of, it's like walking around in a Bose store. You know, you just kind of, you walk around, you try on all the expensive headphones, and you're like, oh, okay, that's nice. Bye.
Slam.
Yeah, but if they do trials, then I would have downloaded like 8 trials already so far.
Right.
And that's 8 apps that I might then buy later. And they have to know this. They have to know this is a problem. I'm sure they're going to address it. At least, I'm not sure. I hope they're going to address it.
Yeah.
I don't know when they're going to address it, but I hope they will address it, and I hope they'll do it soon.
And with that, we probably need to wrap this thing up. We've been talking for about 55 minutes, and I still feel like we could talk for another hour about this, and we will, but we won't do it until next week. Marco,
we've let all the other podcasts talk for an hour about it.
Yeah, we have to. So Marco, thanks as always for your insight and opinions here, and thanks to everybody for listening. You can check out 5x5.tv and you can see previous episodes of this show and the other shows that we do. Thanks to Shopify.com, Zendesk.com. Please support our program by visiting those sites and trying them out. Coupon code 5x5. And that's it, Marco. What are we going to do? Same time next week, right?
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Have a very good week.
See you.